you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Welcome to the Believe You Me podcast with Michael Bisping and Mike Harrington. Luis J. Gomez right about now is in Jamaica, man. Yeah, we know this right now. Harrington, I get it when you're at your parents' house. No, you're not doing that the whole show. You're not sucking on that pen because I have to look at you. Right? You're not sucking on that plastic dick. The whole time I am looking at this show, looking at the screen to do this podcast, I don't want to see you sucking on things. I just don't. It's gross.
I'm sorry, Mike, dude. I lost my fume within, you know, hours of being down here. I have dependence. Something just needs to go in this mouth at almost all times. And it's just not food anymore.
Yeah. Lewis is in Jamaica. So like, there's something else has to go in your mouth.
I set myself up for that one.
You really did. You really did. Well, listen, Lewis, I hope you're having a great time, by the way. Talking of great times, I'm not having one. I've got a pounding headache today. I know it's not healthy for you, but I've taken 8 ibuprofen. I know you shouldn't. I took 3 this morning when I got out of bed, took another 3 a little bit later, and I've just taken another 2, and it's still there. But I will say this, believe it or not, believe you me, when I started doing this, I feel a little better. I'm not saying that you guys have inspired me or you're making me feel better, but I'm cheering up a little bit because I've been a miserable bastard all day with this headache.
Mike Harrington, cure for the common headache.
There you go. Talking of heads, what is that on the top of your head? I mean, I know you're at your father's house, so whenever you're there, the blue fedora has to come out, but I mean, does it really have to stay on the whole show?
I mean, I love it. I'm not a huge fan of what's under it right now, so that's why I'm going with the blue fedora. But yeah, man, it's I got island vibes right now, dude. I'm living island life.
Yeah, but you're not. Lewis is living island life. Get over. Just because Lewis is in Jamaica, man, right about now. Sorry, I can't say Jamaica and not do that because I know everybody gets a kick out of it. Brian, just come on a second. What are you talking about here in the chat? You say the cause of them all is that the ibuprofen.
Just said something that I had to roll my eyes at. He said he was the cure for the common headache. He is literally the cause of every single headache I've had in the past 3 years.
Oh, absolutely. It's the headache between me and Lewis. Anytime we have a headache, normally it's because of something Harrington's done. I see you are still at your parents and you went out this morning walking the dog. That was very nice. But you got to control your dog, Harrington, because I saw on your Instagram story, you walked into the dog park, right? You let your dog off the lead. Fair enough. You're at a dog park. And then boom, that dog just started terrorizing everybody, jumping up on people, trying to hump things. Just you had no control over the dog.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was at a dog park where you must know this, Michael, as a dog owner for many years. When you take your dog to the dog park, you take it off the leash.
Yes.
Right? And then it runs around.
But you still have to like have some kind of control over the animal. You're still going to say, Alfie, sit, come, don't do that. Don't hump that man's leg. Stop taking a shit in the watering fountain or whatever it is.
Well, what happened was people were walking their dogs on leashes inside the dog park. And that's how little Gus got tangled up in them. It's not really his fault. These people were breaking the rules first.
Little Gus. Poor little Gus. What kind of dog is Gus?
He's a half corgi, half Australian shepherd.
Oh, nice. He's a bonny dog. He looks like a happy little thing.
Yeah, he is. He's just a ball of energy. That's the whole reason I'm down here. My dad just had knee surgery and he like can't run the dog. So they just needed somebody to come down and tire him out for a week.
Hey, listen, you get to wear the blue fedora. Lewis is out of town. No, don't lie. Lewis is out of town. You can't bear the sad reality of going into the Gas Digital Studios without your mentor there. Let's be honest. That is the fact. How are people? Where are you? Is it Carolina, North Carolina?
Well, yeah, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, which is why I'm living island life.
Oh, I see. Okay, sorry, I'm not too familiar with South Carolina right about now, man. But how are people down there if you let your dog off the lead? Because around here in California, because like growing up in England, I always had my dog off the lead. You know what I mean? It's like if I'm going out on a walk and I'm in the countryside, I want him to get some exercise. I want him to roam free. I want him to sniff and piss and shit and chase birds and whatever he wants. But here in California, oh my word, the dirty looks that you get. They're like, sir, dogs are supposed to be on the leash. That is the law, I guess. But it's like, come on, man, lighten up.
So does that apply if you're taking Alfie like into the woods? Like I can understand if you're in your residential neighborhood because like, cars are coming around, he could jump on people or whatever. But like as soon as you get like off road a little bit here, it is totally cool to just let your dog off the leash and have him just follow you like a pack animal. You know what I mean? There is something really cool about not having a leash and just having a dog walk next to you like your companion. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like having a friend. I guess you're not used to that. Do you know what I mean? That's generally what they do. They walk down the street, they converse with you. You know, you high five here and there. That's weird. No one high fives as they're walking. Even like there's these trails by my house. It's beautiful. I've been running there most mornings. And this morning I had the dog off the lead and there was two ladies, Karen, I think their name was, and they were not happy. I'm like, are you serious? I never see anybody down here. Never see anybody. Now you're there. I'm passing at a pretty ridiculous pace, I might add. And then that's it. I won't see you again. It's gone. Lighten up. And they were having a go at me.
I can confirm they were Karens.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. They were Karens. Absolutely. I'm trying to think. I've got so many dog stories about the dog that I had in England. Sammy was called. He was a rescue. He was a fucking nightmare. He would piss and shit all over the house. If we forgot our keys and we went back in 2 minutes later, say I forgot my phone or something. We're in the car. Start the car. Shit, forgot my phone. Go back in. He's already pissed on the couch. Rebecca goes upstairs. He's pissed on our bed. He was a fucking disaster. So then we took him back to where we got him from. And we said, because Rebecca was crying her eyes out. You know what I mean? She just couldn't deal. He was biting everybody. You know what I mean? Like we had these glass windows in the front door. And anytime someone walked by, he was always smacking his head into the window. And then one day he actually put his head through the window. Rebecca called me up at work. She's like, Sam's put his head through the window. We've got to take him to the vets. So she came to pick me up from work and his snout was like ripped wide open. There was blood going everywhere. And this was the final straw for Rebecca. As we were driving along, she looked in the rearview mirror and Sam had his head out the window with his snout being separated by the wind with blood just going everywhere. But happy as Larry. And she's like, that's it. That dog's a fucking psycho. So we had to take the dog back and we took the dog back. I said, yeah, sorry, we just can't deal with him. He's tapped. He's crazy. He's biting everybody. The amount of people that he bit, a fisherman down at the river, he'd never seen a fisherman. He bit a fisherman. The fisherman jumped into the river to get away from him. I'm telling you, the stories I have about that dog is crazy. But then when we got home after we dumped the dog, we get home and there's this little dog bowl. You know what I mean? And we're like, oh, God. And we started regretting the decision straight away. And like, Rebecca started crying. I'm like, oh, God, Sam, we got to get him back. So then we go back the next day. I said, listen, you might remember us. Really good looking, handsome guy with a stunning wife. You probably remember us. No, we did not look like that. Trust me. Back in the day, fuck me. It's funny what a little bit of cash in your pocket can do. But we went back the next day and I said, we need to get our dog back. I said, I'm sorry. We were a little emotional. We were pissed off with the piss and the shit in the house, as you would be. But we'd like to bring him home.
And they said we put him down an hour ago.
That would have been funny. But no, wait, would have been. They wouldn't give him the dog, give us the dog. They said, seriously? No. They said, we got to think about what's best for the dog. You know, we don't want you to do that. It's too much emotional turmoil for the dog.
I mean, to be fair, you did bring him in bleeding from the face. Like, yeah, maybe don't give it back to those people.
It's not my fault. The dog's a fucking psycho. In fact, that wasn't that day. We got him stitched up and stuff. But I said, listen, the best thing for that dog is to come home with its owners, where we love him. He has a dog bowl. We got children. He's our family pet. That is the best thing for that dog. So anyway, they said, okay, all right, we'll let you take him. But if you do this again, just letting you know, next time you won't be able to take him. So we get him home, same shit. I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm talking about this for so long, but people have dogs, maybe they're interested. I apologize. Lots of fight stuff going on. But when we got back, he just went back to his ways, you know, shitting and pissing. I'm like, oh my God. And then one day we went to pick up the kids from preschool, you know, kindergarten, whatever. And it was close to the house. So we walked. And as we were walking there, the dog takes a shit on the path, right, on the pavement. And I don't have any bags with me. You know, I didn't expect him to take a shit. And this little old lady spotted the dog taking a shit. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry about that. I'll get it later. I'm not fucking coming back for the dog shit. Anyway, we get the kids. We walk back. We're walking through the front door of the house. And he falls on the floor and starts having a fit, foaming at the mouth. Seriously, no bullshit. Foaming at the mouth and just like having a heart attack or a seizure, and died right then and there. Shit his pants, right? Shit himself. Just one for the road. She used to shit all over the house anyway. So I'm not dying without giving you one last little fucking present, you prick. Anyway, I took him to the vets and they said just like a brain seizure or something like that. It was a brain seizure. I was going to ask my wife. And anyway, so I'm crying my eyes out. Right, my dog's died, even though he was a little shit. He was my dog and he was our pet and we loved him. So I'm crying my eyes out and I'm upset. And then the local authorities came knocking on the door because that old lady had reported me for him doing his shit.
Her name was also Karen.
Definitely Karen. And they came, and two women, they were also called Karen, came to the door and they're issuing me a fine for not picking up the dog crap. And I'm like, are you serious? The dog's dead. So I start telling the whole story and they think I'm lying. They're like, this is the most creative way to get out of paying a fine we've ever seen in our lives. And then Rebecca comes out, she's like, no, the dog's actually dead. Anyway, yeah, went off on a tangent there. I don't know why I told you that story, but still, there you go.
All right. Well, that was very fun. My dog is doing great. So I'm for sure going to treasure the moments I get to spend with him after we're done doing this now, just a little bit more thinking about Sam shitting in your house.
Well, make sure you take the bags. You got to pick up the dog shit. You got to pick up the dog shit. All right. We have a lot of fight stuff to get into. Obviously, we've got a big fight card this weekend. Big news is Kevin Holland stepping up on short notice, replacing the injured Darren Till. In fact, just as we were starting this, let's get into this because it's always fun to talk about Darren Till. What happened? You were telling me about Vittori having a theory that potentially Darren Till is faking the injury, which I think is absolute fucking nonsense. But still, you know. Educate me on this, Harrington.
So he said he admitted he was merely speculating, but he didn't paint Till in a good light. He has some questions about Darren Till's suspicious injury and the choice to withdraw from the fight, to which Darren Till piped up on Instagram, showing a picture of himself in the gym trying to prepare for the fight. He says, "Admar Vittori, what's up with you? Wait, you miss it, mate? You missing a few cells or something? If you only fucking knew what I went through this camp to fight you inside and outside the gym, let's have it right, mate. You were going to be my easiest fight. You are a walking punch bag who's tough. Nothing more and nothing less. So keep your bitter mouth shut. For you or anyone to even think for 1 minute I pull out of a fight with some bullshit excuse makes me howl. Every fight camp, I guarantee I train way harsher injuries than you and 90% of the roster. What do you want me to do? I broke my fucking collarbone, you utter moron. Make sure you win Saturday." Wow. "And here's some advice, you ugly looking Lord of the Rings orc motherfucker."
Fucking hell. Go on, carry on.
"Just be happy for your peers. Be happy the fact that Adesanya beat you. Be happy the fact I was going to school you. And be happy you're at the top in one of the most devastating sports in the world. Stop being a hater, you bum. And you're not from Italy. You've lived in California most of your life, you lying bastard. I'll tag you in my x-ray so you can sleep easy tonight." Golly.
Whoa, scorched earth, fucking hell, mate. You should have fucking done that with the Scouse accent, Harrington. Do you know what I mean? You really missed a trick there, mate. Holy shit. I mean, you can't blame him. So number one, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot to unpack. But number one, that confirms what I was going to ask, because I wasn't sure if it was an injured collarbone or a broken collarbone. So that answers that question. Certainly a broken collarbone. Do we know how the collarbone was actually broken?
No, I believe from everything that I read, it was just a freak accident that happened during training.
Man, as I said, I was on a run before and I was thinking about this situation, actually, because I'm working the event this weekend, just doing the pre and post show. And I was thinking about Darren I was thinking about his injury and how that might have happened. But that must be so bloody painful to break your collarbone. I mean, everything you move, your arm, your neck, everything, and that must be impacted and be so painful. I mean, I like what he said there. Fair play to him. Can't really argue with anything what he said. You know, certainly if Vittori goes out there and talks a little bit of shit, you know, I don't think Darren's faking it, but that's just Vittori trying to stir the pot, trying to get some headlines. It's what you do as fighters, you know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, aren't injuries kind of over the line, though, Michael? I feel like, you know, that's been something you've brought up before. You know, this is one of the most brutal sports on the planet. This is people are going out there risking life and limb, literally, every time they step in the cage. So for one fighter to question or to mock another fighter's injury feels kind of beyond the pale to me.
Oh, yeah, because nobody's ever mocked my eye. Nobody. Never been done. I'm being sarcastic, by the way, Harrington.
Oh, really?
Oh, fuck me. Yeah, they all always used to go after my eye, all of them. And it used to really piss me off. But still, that was fun. Darren, get well, mate. Get well. Hopefully get you on the podcast soon. Wishing you a speedy recovery. But I am excited for Marvin Vettori versus Kevin Holland now. I understand what Till was saying. You're just a big meathead. That's tough. Well, he's right with one part there. Vettori is fucking tough. He's a tough man. He's very, very intense. I mean, I remember when he fought in Jacksonville last year and he was kicking off in the hotel lobby. And he's a wild man, but I like him. I like his energy. I like what he brings to the table. You know, a lot of people, you know, they come with maybe a joke and a smile. Not Vettori. He's your fucking enemy if he's going to fight you. And he's a serious individual as well. He's really, really good. But we'll get into that later.
Him kicking off in the lobby was him going at Carl Roberson, who, you know, from mm-hmm. Vittori's point of view, I understood. I think he talked about it when he came on the show. Like, he prepared for a fight. He prepared, you know, got himself ready in the midst of a pandemic, especially everything that was going on back on that Jacksonville card, the first one back. You know, for him to get there, show up on weight, ready to fight, and then have Carl Roberson not be able to go, but be talking, you know, able to talk shit to him in the lobby. It's like, dude, I've been training for 8 weeks to fight you. Like, what the hell, dude? Like, yeah, I'll do this in a Starbucks right now, which kind of made me like him a lot more.
Oh, me too. But as I say, I was there, and I used to talk a bit of shit, you know, online to Vettori when I was in middleweight as well. And then I was like, fuck, because I'm retired now. I was probably a bit hungover. I was just getting my morning coffee at the Starbucks in the lobby. And I heard this commotion, and we talked about this, so we'll move on in a second. But it's funny, though. But I heard the commotion. I looked around. I see Vettori going fucking apeshit. I'm like, whoa. And the UFC security are pulling him back. And he wasn't, like, just doing it for the cameras or nothing like that. He was losing his shit. And I was like, oh, fuck it. Keep my head low here because I don't want to be next in the crossfire. I'm like, fuck that. I'm not in the mood for going to war with Marvin Vettori at 9:30 in the morning whilst getting my coffee. You know what I'm saying? Lot of news here. Well done on the notes as usual. Do you want to team me up on these topics? And then I'll give an opinion. You can chime in. But should we go through them in, as these scholars say, in numerical order?
Sure, sure. This one, we kind of glanced over this a little bit when we talked about UFC 260, just given Luque's like jump beating Tyron Woodley. But he did come out this week and say, you know, he thinks the win puts him among the elite in the division. The exact quote is this: Masvidal is a guy that I wanted to fight. If he does not become champion, I think it's a fight that can happen. I think it's something that makes sense. Also, we have Colby. He's been playing hard to get, but I would love to fight him as well. I think he's a guy that's going to be a real test for me. I would love to have that fight. Do you think Vicente Luque, with the win over Tyron Woodley, has done enough to put himself in that conversation to be fighting like the top five welterweights?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, I'm a big fan of Vicente Luque. He's a great guy, awesome fighter, brings a lot of action, and he had a tremendous win over Tyron Woodley. Got a second round stoppage, second round, right? Or was it first? It might have been first round.
Check that.
No, second round. First round stoppage. I mean, which is fantastic. I mean, no one else has done that. The problem is that three in a row for Tyron or four now? Four, right?
He lost to Usman, Covington, Burns, and then Luque.
So, I mean, if he was the first one to beat him or the second one, even the third, maybe he could insert himself into the top. But unfortunately for Woodley, he's lost four in a row. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think it puts him at the top of the division. You know, but it's certainly still a fantastic win. It's still a very, very credible opponent, a former champion, you know, potential future Hall of Famer, you know, certainly someone that will be remembered in this sport, a longtime champion. But yeah, it doesn't put him in the highest echelon of the division. But speaking of that division, it is getting a little frustrating, you know, because a lot of people are stalling, it seems, these days. You know, I'm not sure what's going on with Masvidal. Colby Covington won't take a fight. Has Masvidal got a fight?
Yeah, Masvidal has Usman next month.
Shit, what am I saying? He's fighting next month. Kamaru Usman. Pardon me, Mr. Gamebred. No, I'm thinking of Covington. Covington's hanging out for a title shot. You know what I mean? But
Yeah. Well, we just got Burns versus Stephen Thompson. Stephen Thompson great just waiting fight. In the wings was always like that to me is the one where I'm like, you know, whatever that guy books next is going to have serious implications on the title, especially after his performance against Jeff Neal. But somebody like Luque, who's now won 9 of his last 10, you know, he's getting tons of finishes, just racking them up. He absolutely has power in those hands. His only loss was a decision loss to Wonderboy, who I think is now one fight away from a title. So yeah. Something like in that quote, he mentioned if Masvidal loses against Usman, I mean, what is a better fight for Game Bread than somebody like Luque, who is he's not shooting for a takedown. He's standing in the center of the cage and throwing with you.
Oh, yeah, and that's why it's such a fun fighter to watch, you know. Just doesn't have the star power of somebody like a Masvidal, and not many people do, to be fair. All right, moving on, number 2, new Venom fight gear launched, was it today or yesterday? It looks good. I like it. You like it, Harrington?
I don't hate it. You know, everything about it just, you know, it feels like I like when Dana, when they came out with the uniforms, like whatever that was, 6-7 years ago, that idea
2015, because I remember I fought Tali's Lightish, and that was the first time that the Reebok stuff was worn. But do you remember? Do you remember? Yeah, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, no, it was. That was the first ever fight. Yeah. Hmm. If I've been hitting the head a lot, Don. I'm getting a lot of things wrong today, so maybe that's one as well. But it's not. I know that for a fact. But do you remember when the Reebok deal came out, all the fucking mistakes that they had? Giblet, what was it? Anderson Dos Santos, and they just got all the fighters' names wrong. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, I don't think, did any of that actually make it into the cage? I'm trying
I don't know. I don't know about that, but I know they had like
the promotional gear was all fucked up.
Yeah, the promo stuff was all messed up, and then they had that like weird like fashion shoot. You know what I mean? And I remember when it happened. Obviously, I was still competing at the time, and they wanted the fighters to come in and like. It was in New York, and we had to sit down, and then there was a representative from Reebok there, and all the fighters had to sit down, and we had a bag. Was like Reebok merchandise in it for us, and then we had a notepad and a pen, and there was a lady at the front, very nice lady, very professional, doing a job, but like talking to us about the merchandise. And I was, you know, I just went there for my free shit. Do you know what I mean? I didn't go for a fucking lecture. And I was sitting there, and they were going on about the sports bras and how the support for the bras and this and that. And I was like, I could not give a flying fuck. I'm sure they're great, but how you make them, I'm not in the apparel business. I'm never going to be manufacturing clothing. I am not interested. So in the end, I just like, I left. You know, I got up and left. And when I tried to take my bag, they wouldn't let me have it.
For real?
I swear to God.
You had to sit through the lecture for you?
He said, if you want your merchandise, it wasn't my merchandise. It was just a free swag bag from Reebok. And it was a big bag of shit. Because if you want that, you have to sit through it. I'm all right, well, fuck it. Never mind. See you later.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, look at the time to value ratio there. Like Michael Bisping, you know how valuable an hour of your time is? Like there's no way that swag bag, you know, is filled with, you know, I don't know, what are you, $2,000 an hour? Like
I don't know what I am, but I do know that I wasn't interested in sports bras. Okay. And I never will be. Listen, it's not a female versus male thing. It's just that I have no use for a sports bra. And even if I did, I'm not interested how they're made. Fair enough. Are you interested in sports bras, Hamilton?
Well, I mean, depends who's wearing it.
Well, fair enough. But still, I got to say, the new Venom stuff, I like the designs. They're really cool. And I think this weekend, that's the first event, correct?
Well, yeah, they officially switched over. I think it was, you know, Monday morning. So, you know, now every fight going forward is going to be the Venom gear. They had Brian Ortega, Aljamain Sterling, and one of the female fighters, Kaylee Harris. Hansen, I can't remember, but yeah, they showed them all off. There is something about that there's something about that corporate look that I like so much. Like, this is an actual league. Everybody is like following, you know, like I grew up watching team sports. So seeing people in uniform, like, automatically registers like, oh, this is professional sports that I'm watching, versus like guys coming out with flames on their shorts and like, but
yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's two sides to every story, or there's other points, but I agree. I'm with you. Some people liked the fact that the fighters were able to express themselves. Right. But I do feel that it is way more professional when they come out. And as you say, they're in the uniforms, everything matches. There's Brian Ortega, who will be coaching the Ultimate Fighter head to toe in Venom. It's cool shit. I like the designs, but you know, some of the people coming out, you know, some of the stuff they used to wear was pretty bad. I mean, I'll never remember. What was his, I'll never forget, sorry. What was his name who came out with the fucking, the blue Superman Speedos on? What was his name?
I cannot remember this
at all. And Dana was fuming. They were the fucking tight, tiny little blue Speedos. And he fought in them. Do you know what I mean? They were the tiniest little fucking, what do you call them? Budgie killers, whatever.
Dennis Holman.
There you go. Well done, Brian. Dennis Holman. And Dana was not happy. He's like, what? I mean, I'm not surprised. He looked fucking ridiculous. He looked like he was an Olympic diver, you know, but still, whatever. All right, let's just take a quick second to hear from Hemp Fusion. Listen, Hemp Fusion, they are a CBD and wellness company. And everybody always talks about how important it is to get a good night's sleep. But following that advice can be very, very difficult. That's why the people over at Hemp Fusion created sleep support to help you get the rest that you deserve and feel your best every single morning. Because we know you don't get a good night's sleep. You feel like shit. I didn't get a good night's sleep last night. I've got a terrible headache. I'm very, very tired. And it sucks. Fortunately, with Hemp Fusion, which I didn't use last night, obviously, I forgot, it blends 10 milligram of CBD, terpenes, omegas, and GABA with black pepper and clove oil. Together, they unleash the entourage effect, working together to deliver powerful benefits that equal well-rounded sleep support. So whether you're up late with the kids, pets, existential dread, trying to figure out what color fedora you're going to wear tomorrow, if you take the Hemp Fusion sleep support, that will be a thing of the past, Harrington, and clearly you chose which fedora you want today.
Yeah, because I took some Hemp Fusion last night before bed, got some great rest, woke up feeling, you know, refreshed, ready to go, ready to take on the day. There's absolutely no downside to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also, if you go to the website, there's all kinds. They have a CBD for stressy bastards like myself that is blended with ashwagandha, and that really does help, you know. Did I mention this? I've been going through a little bit of anger management lately. I don't know if I talked about that recently, but I am. And I do find that the CBD stress support absolutely does help. They got one if you're lacking with energy, much like my wife. And if you go to the website, hempfusion.com, all kinds of wellness and products on there. You know, they got anti-aging creams, they got eczema creams, they got all kinds of stuff. So if you go to the website, hempfusion.com, and then you use the code COUNT, you will get 25% off their high quality CBD products from hempfusion.com. That code once again is COUNT, 25% off and free shipping. The free shipping is always good to have as well. hempfusion.com, code is COUNT, 25% off. Okay, where were we? Moving on. Francis Ngannou says that he is interested in a fight with Tyson Fury. Do you have any details, Harrington?
So he said, I would like to fight other heavyweight boxers such as Tyson Fury. I'm open to that. Remember, boxing was my primary dream. I still have that fire, the dream inside me. I believe at some point I'm going to make that step. So I don't know if it's necessarily a thing that he's looking at, like, I want to jump in there before he fights AJ, you know, but he does have an eye on heavyweight boxing. Do you think Ngannou can make that crossover?
100%. 100. I mean, come on. The man hits like a Ford Fiesta going 17,000 miles an hour. No, for sure he can. In terms of technicality, he has a long way to catch up, though. I will say that. He has the raw ingredients, of course. But yeah, it was funny because Eddie Hearn, he's the promoter for Anthony Joshua, and another fighter called Dillian White, both out of England. And he said this week, he said, okay, we'd be open to that, actually, but I'd rather it was Dillian White, because Dillian White used to be a kickboxer before turning to boxing. And he said, what we'll do is we'll do a two-fight series. We'll do one in the UFC, and we'll do one in a boxing ring. That's what I saw yesterday on Twitter, which is interesting. I don't think that'll ever happen, but you never know. I used to train with Dillian White, well, a little bit, for one training camp. Good guy. Shout out, Dillian. Hope you're well, mate. But that'd be fun to see. I'd like to see that. Dillian White, Francis Ngannou, going for it. I think going in against Anthony Joshua might be a little bit much. Tyson Fury might be a little bit much. I was saying that, fucking Dillian White's top of the food chain as well. So no disrespect to Dillian.
Well, I mean, I think the Anthony Joshua thing is interesting, given that we just saw a power puncher in Andy Ruiz come in and knock AJ's head off, you know, like obviously I think he was looking past him. And I think that had a lot to do with that. And especially, you know, we saw in the rematch how that all went down, but like, you know, somebody like Deontay Wilder, who certainly doesn't have the boxing prowess of somebody like Tyson Fury, was able to go 12 rounds with him the first time and damn near killed the man with that shot in the 10th round. So it's like, it's one of those things to me heading into that rematch with Fury. My point with Wilder was like, I don't see any man going 24 rounds with Deontay Wilder and not getting knocked out. Tyson Fury had to like bully him. You know, he had to come forward and bring the fight to Wilder in that second fight. He couldn't rely on his superior boxing because of the threat of that power punch. So somebody like Francis Ngannou, you know, I don't know, could Tyson Fury come forward and just bully him and use the footwork to keep him in the corner, or would that power punch find a home?
Tyson Fury is an exceptionally skilled boxer. He really is. If you watch him fight, the amount of feints that he uses. I remember when he fought Vladimir Klitschko and he beat him for the title. It was just nonstop feints the whole time. And that is absolutely exhausting to do that for 12 rounds. But that's what he fucking did. And of course, he has a tremendous reach advantage. And for such a big man that, you know, in the past let himself go a little bit. Tremendous gas tank, never slows down. And he's a smart fucking boxer. I mean, all the talk that you hear out of Tyson Fury and, you know, the shenanigans, if you will, he's a smart, smart fighter. He knows his tools, his strengths, and he plays to them. He uses his reach and he has a tremendous gas tank, like I said. So I don't think Tyson Fury would be good for him. I don't think Anthony Joshua would be good for him. Listen, Ngannou's still raw. You know what I mean? He's still fucking raw, but that power, it really is an equalizer. Now, in boxing, the level's a little higher. The technique I'm talking about, you know? But I like what you said, Deontay Wilder and Francis Ngannou, take my fucking money right now, please. That'd be awesome.
That would be such a fun fight, especially that 1-1, dude. That 1-1 has been a dream for years and years. So, like, that is something still I want to see that so badly. Have the boxer come over and actually compete in MMA. Have the MMA guy go over and compete in boxing. So, you know, if you win in your respective sport, God bless. You know, if somebody can somehow sweep the series, that's a legend right there. So,
and I'd like to see it. I would like to see Francis Ngannou go over to boxing. I mean, of course, he's got a lot to do in the UFC. He just won the belt. He's going to be there for some time. And I think he's going to go on a long, powerful reign of dominance. I really do. There's a couple of people, Derek Lewis. In fact, I don't even think, is that in the notes about John Jones? It's in there. Well, now seems like a good time to get into that, though.
I wasn't going to say John Jones. I was going to say the Ngannou thing that Derek Dana Lewis. White has kicked the tires on the Derek Lewis fight. He wanted them for the, I believe it was a June 12th bout. Ngannou said no, you know, it's too quick of a turnaround. He just won the belt. Let him have a little bit of time off, which seems fair. You know, you're the heavyweight champion of the world. Enjoy it for a little bit. But it, to me, like Ariel was saying, it's interesting that the UFC seems to have moved on from that John Jones super fight.
Yeah, it's disappointing. That's the word I'd use, because I was really, really looking forward to that. And I think I speak for most of the MMA community. Don't get me wrong, Derek Lewis versus Ngannou, when it happens, fantastic fight. First one sucked. I'm sure the second one will be a lot better. But everyone wanted to see Jones versus Ngannou. You know, I wanted to see that. Unfortunately, Jones is now coming out talking, you know, well, his coach was throwing around numbers like 50 million. You know what I mean? When you start talking those numbers, I'm sorry, you're just taking yourself out of the conversation. I'm not saying he's scared or none of that stuff. I'm just saying he's asking too much money, you know, and the UFC, they've said, oh, well, fuck it. If you're going to talk crazy, then we'll forget about you and we'll move on. And when you want to come back down to reality and talk some real numbers. Now, again, I don't know. I just saw that one tweet that, or headline that you saw, that his coach was saying 50 million. Maybe that wasn't put to the UFC, but still. UFC got to move on.
To clarify that, what his coach said the UFC could pay Jones $50 million and still make bank on the event. Now, I'm assuming that in that thought process, it is sold out the stadium where the Rangers play, in a football stadium where you can have a live gate of like 100,000 people or whatever the case may be, and charge astronomically on pay-per-view. I mean, John Jones doesn't have the pay-per-view track record to say that they could pay him $50 million and still make bank. So I would assume that they know something we don't know about live gate numbers and how this is going to blow up John Jones' superstar power. But, you know, to that point, though, it is interesting in the sense that that is the only fight I could see selling out at an American football stadium. right?
I don't know about that. I reckon if you put Conor versus Dustin there, that'll probably do it. I reckon, you know, there's some big fights. There's some big fights. The thing is, though, in terms of money generated, it's not only gate and pay-per-view. You think of all the worldwide TV rights as well. So there's a lot of money generated. Anyway, moving on, we spoke about that for a while. Stephen Bonner. Go on, what were we going to say?
Sure, I did want to ask you this, because the bookies did come out with odds on a possible Ngannou versus Lewis rematch. Now, if you remember, Derek Lewis won a unanimous decision the first time. However, Francis Ngannou is opening as a minus 350 favorite against Derek Lewis. Why did the bookies keep discounting the Black Beast here? And do you think Ngannou's made enough improvements where that's warranted?
I mean, he just knocked out Stipe Miocic, you know. Granted, Derek Lewis just knocked out Curtis Blaydes and did it with one punch, and it was fucking beautiful. And that's what Derek Lewis does. But I would say the trajectory of the two of them, I would say whilst Derek Lewis's trajectory is very high, it is a steep incline. I would say Ngannou's being the heavyweight champion, just knocking out Stipe Miocic, that probably puts him ahead. And then when you look at the history of the track record, you know, Lewis hits hard and he's knocked out a lot of people, but they haven't been as quick or as quiet awe-inspiring as Ngannou's. You know what I'm saying? Like, Ngannou, you was like, fuck me. Like, this guy's going to knock you out. And Derek Lewis, of course, he's going to knock you out as well. But you might take a few before that one puts you to sleep. You know what I'm saying? So I think maybe that's why. But anyway, we talked about that a lot last week. Let's move on from that one. What else you got?
All right, let's see here. So Dan Hooker has an idea for getting himself back into it. If you remember, he had to take all that time off after fighting, you know, on the first card of the year. He's ready to get back after it. He says he wants a fight with Gaethje, but he would accept a fight with Rafael Dos Anjos as like a backup. That's his number two guy that he'd like to fight. If you remember, RDA is coming off the win against Paul Felder, who stepped in as a late replacement. And then, you know, obviously Justin Gaethje's last fight was the loss to Khabib. So,
yeah. If I'm Dos Anjos, I want to fight Justin Gaethje. And if I'm Justin Gaethje, I want to fight Dos Anjos. You know, no disrespect to Dan Hooker, you know, a tremendous fighter, but they're just bigger names. You know, the higher profile, you know, and the high profile spot that Dan Hooker did have. Okay, no, he's had main events in the past as well, but the most recent one, co-main event on Conor's card, you know, he got bingoed in one punch, you know what I mean? So he's got a little bit of rebuilding to do. And it's probably smart for Dan Hooker not to go in against Justin Gaethje or even Dos Anjos right now. You know, I'm not saying he couldn't beat those guys. He's a tremendous fighter. He has a lot of skills, you know, but they're both really, really good grapplers, you know, and they're going to mix things up. Oh, saying that, we never see Gaethje fucking mix things up. Who am I kidding? Why do I even say that? He can wrestle. He could mix them up if he wanted to, but he just fucking doesn't. And I got to say, that is pretty gangster on his behalf.
Dude, the one time the analysts finally say, fuck it, Justin is not wrestling at all. He's only throwing hands. He's immediately going to put on a wrestling clinic like his GSP in 2013, dude.
Yeah. But I'd like to see, I think that's a really good fight. Gaethje and Dos Anjos.
That's such a fun fight. And I was going to ask you about that because you have Chandler versus Oliveira booked. You have Dustin versus Conor booked up. It's Tony Ferguson has an opponent. Like, all the top lightweights are booked except for Justin Gaethje. And the next man up, I believe, is number seven RDA. So do you think they're actually going to book that fight?
I hope so, because, you know, Gaethje needs to fight and he wants to fight, I'm sure. You know, you got to stay active. He's in his prime. You can't waste that waiting, sitting around for the perfect fight. And the more active you are, the better you get. You know, you stay active. You when you're in training camp, you make leaps and bounds, you strides in your skill set. So they should make that fight. You know, unless they got something else up their sleeve, which I don't know about. But that's a fucking great matchup, let's be honest. Okay, what else we got, bud?
Well, I mean, this is just kind of a silly one. Figure that, you know, you might have some fun with this. Stephen Bonner got kicked out of
the video. Can we play the video for this for the YouTubers?
Sorry, there is no video of this. Surprisingly enough,
I've seen it many. Okay. What do you mean? Right, Harrington, you talk for a second. What are you talking? Bro, there's no video. There's a video. I've seen it. He's in the gym. He's got a mask. He's got no mask on, and he's talking shit to everyone else in the gym because obviously he was in a gym and he had no mask on. And someone's reported him, and he said he's being kicked out. If you did your homework, if you were the producer that you proclaimed to be, Harrington, you would have provided the video in the notes.
Well, I hate to defend Harrington, but the video seems to have been taken down.
Oh, so it was Stephen Bonner's Instagram, and he took it down because he probably realized that he looked like a bit of a dipshit. Not that I'm calling him a dipshit. I'm just saying you looked like a bit of a dipshit. Just put the mask on. If you want to go to a gym and it's there, it's a private business, and they say you got to wear a mask, well, then you got to wear a fucking mask. Simple as that. No two ways around it.
Well, his defense for it was, I've been coming to this gym for 14 years, getting kicked out on my birthday because one of these sheep was complaining that my mask was dropping. Well, guess what, sheep? I got a medical exemption. I have asthma. I'm doing you a favor by even playing pretend. Masks don't do anything. Wake up, you sheep. Tattletales. Cowards.
Are you reading that or have you memorized that?
I surprisingly, no. I was reading it from the sheet, even though my Stefan Bonner acting skills are that superb. I mean, dude.
Hold on. Let me just say, if he has a medical condition, if he has asthma, then maybe he does actually want to put a mask on. You know what I'm saying? Because at risk and all that jazz, you know what I'm saying?
Well, according to him, the masks aren't really doing anything. So he's really doing you guys a favor just by throwing on in the first place. But the thing that stuck out to me most, Michael, and I think you are going to agree with this, my man actually tried to use It's My Birthday as an excuse. He's a grown man, dude. What are you doing?
It's my birthday. I don't want to wear a mask. It's like, tough shit. We don't care what day it is. 7 days a week, 365, until this bullshit passes, you got to wear the mask. So just play the game. Put the mask on. Stop embarrassing yourself. You know what I mean? Have you, Brian, have you had any, you know, non-mask wearing scenarios where you've had a little altercation?
No, I mean, everybody's been pretty chill with me. Like, it is Brian, like a nice...
No. So, sorry, Brian, stop disappearing. I want to talk to you for a bit. Stay on the screen.
Here
with
I
that
am.
Beautiful head of hair that you have, but Harry, to continue with your point. I was just welcoming Brian to the show for a longer feature. Brian, we need you. Come on, I'm bored of Harrington already.
I'm bored of me. No, like what has been nice, it's kind of a nice get out of jail free card with the homeless, right? Because like they always come up to me with the mask down and I'm just like, I mean, come on, buddy, put your mask on. And then while they're fumbling with the mask, you just scoot, walk away from them, you know?
That guy might have been on the verge of death, starvation. And you're just looking for an excuse just to fuck him off. Not only just say, I'm sorry, I don't have any spare change or any cash I can give you. I'm not even going to give you the respect by giving you the time of day, talking to you like a human being. You know what I mean? That's somebody's son, somebody's wife, daughter, and you just treat them like a second-class citizen, Harrington.
I like how his trick to get out of altruism is, look over there.
Look over there. Brian, you seem like someone that isn't, you know, from what I'm learning more about you. You're a conspiracy guy. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's like a loaded term. I just know that the government doesn't have my best interest at heart.
They probably don't. But do you wear your mask?
I have a bandana that I wear around my neck. And if I go into anywhere that has a sign that says I need to be wearing a mask to go in, I throw it over my face.
You know, just while we're on this topic, I'm looking at you, and again, impressive head of hair. When's the last time you cut your hair back? Because as soon as I finish this, I'm going to go get a haircut, and I'm very much looking forward to it. It's getting a little long for me. I have been contemplating shaving my head, but when's the last time you chopped?
I think when I was bartending, like 5 years ago, some girl came into the bar and goes, your long hair is gross. You should let me give you a haircut and turn you into a guy that I'd fuck.
Oh,
so I went back to her apartment.
Great line, by the way.
I thought it was.
Until you got home and it was a man.
Well, first, I went back to her apartment. She gave me this fucking lame haircut. I had like one of these like speed lines going down. Like the part, it was fucking ridiculous.
You had like the Ngannou lightning?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, God.
And so I get there. She's like cutting my hair. And I'm like trying to figure out how I'm going to go from this chick buzzing my head to
you buzzing your head
pretty much. And then like four friends show up of hers.
Hell yeah. You're like, oh my God, this is getting better and better. Free haircuts. And we're finishing with an orgy.
No, some of them were like blue hairs and like weird fucking.
Well, Harrington would have done well with the blue hair. He's got the blue hat.
I get it, man.
It just
didn't turn out the way I expected when that line got thrown at me. So never again.
When she finished the hair, did she not look at you and say, yeah, you now look like somebody I would fuck?
No, she was just like, okay, we're done.
Okay. All right. Well, that was a bit of an anticlimax, wasn't it? Harrington, let's take a look at your head. Take the fedora off. Take it off.
An anticlimax.
Aaron Dinn's other name is anticlimax.
You, oh my God, you look like, what's his name? Is it Bert Kreischer?
You look like
Bert Kreischer.
But without the Mickey Mantle gene.
What's the Mickey Mantle gene?
It's like a Bert Kreischer thing.
Just being able to drink around the clock 24/7.
Is it? Hold on. Oh, no, not Bert Kreischer. Who's the other one? Is Bert Kreischer the big fat one that's always naked?
Yeah.
Always has his shirt off. Right. So not Bert Kreischer. The other one.
Tom Segura.
Tom Segura. Yeah, that looks like Harrington.
Yeah.
You look like Tom Segura.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been getting Tom and Bert for as long as I've been working in comedy. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I was off the mark with Bert Kreischer. I meant Tom Segura.
I did Bert Kreischer for Halloween one year, actually. It was pretty sweet. Just took my shirt off. It was dope.
Exactly. Easy peasy. All right, let's get back to the show. What else we got?
All right, let's see here. All right. So I got a choice of three, right? These are my scraping the bottom of the barrel here, right?
Okay.
Do you want to talk about Logan Paul versus Jake Paul, Macy Barber versus Miranda Maverick, or Dustin Poirier versus the World's Strongest Man?
No, I don't want to talk about any of them. Nothing about McGregor and Poirier going at each other in the on the Twitter. Nothing. You didn't pick up on that. You didn't see that. That's setting the world on fire. Dustin Poirier and the World's Strongest Man. Yeah, they've been talking shit because McGregor said, I'll meet you in the center of the octagon. Or Poirier said that, whatever. And then McGregor came back and said, yeah, this time I'm going to be training 7 days a week like I used to do. And Poirier came back and said, yeah, I never slack. I never take days off and things like that. It was an interesting little back and forth.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did see that. It didn't register as like newsworthy, really. But the thing that stuck out to me,
it's
from the
fucking more newsworthy than fucking. I'm not saying it. I don't want to. I don't want to discuss or diss any fighters. You know what
then
I mean?
Two top 15 female flyweights facing off against each other.
Hey, Macy Barber and Miranda Maverick. That's a sensational fight. It's a really good matchup for Miranda Maverick. It really is, and it's a good matchup for Macy Barber. And I was interested because Miranda Maverick, I think she's had two wins in the UFC, and she looks like a really, really good prospect. And I'm wondering, matching up against Macy, the future Barber, your personal favorite. I'm like, what's going on there? Are they off the hype train of Macy Barber, perhaps? Because one of them has got to lose, and you know, as we know, Macy lost her last two. She was talking about being the youngest champ. Could still do it. You never know. She might turn it around. You know, experience is key. But the fact that they're putting her up against Miranda, I'm like, interesting. But a great fight nonetheless. But still, there you go.
Yeah.
I would say the people listening to this would rather hear tittle tattle on Twitter from Poirier and McGregor.
Yeah. So the thing with McGregor that really jumped out to me was, if I'm not mistaken, he was like, look, you came out. Oh, yeah, here it is. Good to hear, Dustin. As last time you backed up and shot inside in the first 30 seconds, I'll be in the middle from the very go. If you want it, you know that I'll be ready for the taxes this time too. See you there. So calling out Dustin on, you know, not only backing up, you know, not coming straight forward and meeting McGregor in the center of the octagon, but also shooting for takedowns almost immediately. Do you think that is going to be the same game plan for Dustin, or, you know, is he going to stand there and start a firefight with McGregor?
I mean, who knows, right? Who knows? Because I mean, that's probably McGregor trying to goad Dustin into, you know, it's good for Conor. If they start that first round and they're both fresh as a daisy, you know, Conor probably has the harder punches, even though he was on the receiving end of a knockout in the last fight. I still think Conor's probably got the heavier hands, probably the faster hands. But he kind of diminishes the longer the fight goes. So it plays into Conor's hands if they both stand there and say, fuck it, let's throw down. But Dustin Poirier hasn't come this far in his career to do that, you know, to let his ego get in front of him. What do? It's a mixed martial arts fight. You mix it up. You use your footwork. You go side to side. You go forwards and backwards. Yeah, okay, it's a good little line. Meet me in the center of the octagon. I used to say that to people as well. Come on, let's just throw down. Don't shoot a takedown, please. For fuck's sake, don't shoot a takedown because I can't wrestle to save my fucking life. But they would still wrestle, and you can't be mad at them for doing that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but I mean, there was a moment in that second fight between Poirier and McGregor earlier this year where Poirier like did the finger point to be like, ah, I got you. I got your timing down. And he did eat a very, very, very clean shot from McGregor on the button and kept on coming. So my question for you is, like, does Dustin Poirier still respect McGregor's hands heading into this fight? Or is it a thing where at 155, McGregor just doesn't have that same level of, like, I guess, pop or power, whatever the case may be? And can Dustin win a straight-up firefight?
I think he can win a straight-up firefight, of course. What was the first question you asked? Does
Dustin have that timing down, and is McGregor's power as much of a factor?
Well, if you look at Dustin Poirier, and I was doing this earlier, actually, looking at his record on Wikipedia, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, yes, he got stopped by Michael Johnson, and he got choked out by Khabib. Everyone gets done by Khabib, right? So no shame there. And Johnson came out blistering in the first round, 1 minute 35, knocked him out. We know Johnson, when he's on form, he's got great hands and fantastic hand speed. But
that was also, five, 6 years ago?
Yeah, very, very long time. 2016, 18, pardon me. But after he beat McGregor, after he lost to McGregor, beat Carlos Diego Ferreira, Yancy Medeiros, Joseph Duffy, Bobby Green, Jim Miller, Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, Max Holloway, lost to Khabib, beat Dan Hooker, and then knocked out Conor McGregor. Point I'm making is he has been doing very, very well at lightweight. The first fight was at 145. The weight cut obviously affected his ability to take a shot because Dustin Poirier has been in there with heavy, heavy hitters like Justin Gaethje, like Eddie Alvarez, Max Holloway, Anthony Pettis, you know, these guys, you know, Dan Hooker, these guys can fight. And he's gone out there and he's passed the fucking test. Dan Hooker teed off on him many, many times. That was a tremendous fight that when Hooker and Poirier went at it. Incredible. Conor McGregor on the flip side, what is he, 1-2 at lightweight, I think?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the loss to Poirier, the loss to Khabib, and the win against Alvarez. That's his only three fights.
So I think, McGregor can still knock people out. Of course he can, you know what I mean? But it was easier to do at 145 because he was fighting smaller guys. Now he's fighting bigger guys. I'm not saying he can't knock people out. Of course he can. You know, he's a knockout artist. He's very, very good. But it's a little harder when they get bigger. You know, and at 170, he had those wins there. But they were 155ers, let's be honest. But still, either way, it's still a good fucking fight. And everyone's going to be intrigued.
And only one of those was a knockout, right? He had the loss to Diaz. He had the win against Diaz. That was the decision. The only knockout at 170 was Donald Cerrone.
No, I'm not, you know, if you just look at those things, they can kind of paint a picture, but it's not an accurate picture. You can look at facts like that and come and assess things and come up with theories, but at the end of the day, it's mixed martial arts, you know what I mean? But saying that, the numbers don't lie and the stats, they do show historical value, you know what I'm saying? That is worth something. And these are the type of things that the bookies look at when they set the odds, you know what I mean? They look at all these stuff, like Yanni the Greek. Have you seen him on the UFC?
Oh, yeah.
He does the, what is it, Beyond the Line or Inside the Line or whatever it's called, On the Line.
I have been a fan of Ace since his nickname was Vegas Runner. I've been listening to that
Ace?
Guy for
Who's
kind of
Ace?
Decade now. That's another one of his nicknames.
Oh, really? He's an awesome guy.
Next time you run into him, say, what's up, Ace?
How's he talking? Oh, so the Sharks are coming in with the money and the he's really fucking good. And when you listen to him,
what you gotta do is head out there, gotta beat the syndicates to the line.
Yeah, and he would give his teeth, give Darren Till a run for their money, let's be honest. But he's a fucking great guy. But so Yanni the Greek knows nothing about fighting, but he's out there giving betting advice because he looks at the numbers. Right. And he looks at the history of them and he looks at, you know, he goes through all their stats and everything. And he comes up with some very, very smart stuff and he gives a lot of good advice and he wins people a lot of money. So there you go. Check it out On the Line. Shout out Yanni the Greek.
He had a great point about the Ngannou fight. He's like, you know, Ngannou was like a minus 240 favorite in the first fight with Stipe, and you could get him at like minus 110, minus 120 for the last fight. And his whole point was like, look, one outcome should not change the line this much. We knew the line was solid in the first place, so you're getting insane value getting Ngannou at minus 120, and he nailed that one. So
yeah,
good
on
VR.
He totally nailed it. He really did. And you know, also, I'm not going to go into details, but he's got quite the interesting story as well. You know, like wise guys and all that type of stuff from that part of the world. You know what I mean? I think he might have had to get out of Jersey or New York for a bit because the fucking wise guys. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up.
There's a reason he ended up in Vegas. But next time you run into him, ask him about who were those twin brothers from London who Tom Hardy did a movie where he played both of them. I think
the
it was
Craze.
Called Legend. Yeah, ask him about his story about the Craze next time you talk to him. He's got a
really?
Pretty crazy story about the Craze. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the Craze. Okay, okay. Are you aware of the Craze?
I've seen the movie. I know a couple of their antics.
Now, I tell you what you should watch, though, is the original Craze movie. It's oh, yeah. nothing like the Tom Hardy one. It's you know, it's a little more dramatic and less comedic, but it's a good movie. They were fucking psychopaths, well, according to the movies.
What's it called?
It's called The Craze.
Okay. All right. So yeah, last thing. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say one last thing on this before we get off the McGregor versus Poirier. On the note of the betting line, McGregor currently a -120 favorite against
Ooh.
Dustin Poirier.
Interesting. And what's Poirier? What is he plus what?
He's flat odds, +100. Put a dollar down, you win a dollar.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Interesting. You know, because Dustin being so active after all these years, there's two theories, right? There's a theory that he's more miles on the clock, more damage, all those wars that he had, you know. And I thought that going into the second fight, I thought the thing against Dustin winning this fight is the fight. For example, look at that fight with Dan Hooker. It was an absolute war, tremendous fight, great show of heart, spirit, skill on both of them. But fights like that take, you know, a little bit of something from you. They shorten your career. You can't go out and have those type of fights all the time. But I was wrong. But the other side of that theory, though, is that you're in there. You're staying sharp. You're not taking time away. You know, when you're away from the sport, maybe you're doing other things. Maybe you're partying a little too hard. You know, hanging out, you know, in nightclubs or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But Poirier's been in the gym the whole time, fighting. And I think that's to his benefit. I really, really do. But we don't know what's going to happen. Bookies have got McGregor as a favorite. I can see an argument for that. If they added Poirier as the favorite, I could see an argument for that. It's a solid fight.
All right. Very excited for that. Should be fun. All right. You want to break
but
down
even
this?
Even though you've got Derek Lewis versus John Jones as a bigger fight.
I have John Jones versus Francis Ngannou as a bigger fight. Yeah, I do. I think
pay-per-view-wise, you think so?
Pay-per-view-wise, probably not. But I'm saying for an American audience, right? It helps, in my mind at least, if you're trying to fill out a stadium, to have an American in that fight, you know?
And Dustin John Jones, Poirier is American.
Oh, wow. I'm dumb. Holy crap, I'm dumb. Wow.
No, you're not dumb, actually. You make a lot of good points, Harrington. But yeah, Poirier is American. And, you know, there's no bigger star. In fact, I don't think anyone even scratches the surface of McGregor. Let's be honest. You know what I mean? He's the biggest star. Now saying that, you know, there's pressure on McGregor for this one. You know what I mean? He has to win this fight. If he doesn't win this fight, then, you know, then I'm not going to say it's over. Because it's not, because then he'll fight Nate Diaz and then he beats Nate Diaz, you know, and then he's right back in there. But you know what I'm saying? This illusion. I read an interesting article from Brett Okamoto recently. Brett Okamoto was saying, that, you know, he's had a great career. And if you look at the numbers and his record and all the rest of it, it's a fine record, something to be proud of. But the Conor McGregor that was talking in 2016, would he be happy with the way things had turned out? And it was an interesting perspective what he wrote. And I read it and I thought, yeah, because back then he was talking double champ, this, that, blah, 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 can never be beaten, all the rest of it. Well, now, you know, a few years later, he's lost a few. There's no shame to that. There's no shame to lose it. I lost a few as well. Everyone loses a few. You stick around the sport, it will happen. But compared to how he set out his stall, would he be satisfied? I don't know. I'm not saying he is or if he isn't. But I'm just saying it was Brett Okamoto that asked that question. I was like, that's an interesting angle to look at it.
So this is an interesting one. Bill Simmons, right? A very famous writer. I've been reading his column for years and years. He has this theory, right? It's called the Eddie and the Cruisers theory, which is like, it's a movie from the 80s or whatever. And the story is like, this band comes out with an album and the lead singer like dies tragically, you know, like right at the height of their fame, right?
Hold on. Is this a real life situation or is this a theoretical situation?
No, it was a fictional movie, right? But like he uses that as like a corollary for like, all right, if McGregor had gotten the Mayweather fight, right? Lost the Mayweather fight, but like became the biggest star ever, made the crossover into boxing, got the $100 whatever million payday. Let's say, you know,
hold on, he did do that.
Right. Now I'm saying after that happens, tragically, his yacht sinks, right? And McGregor passes away. He never makes a return to MMA. Is his legacy stronger than if he came back, the loss to Khabib, the loss to Dustin Poirier, et cetera, et cetera? Like, yeah, his life has gone on, you know, but like,
sure,
you know,
sure. Yeah, no, his legacy, in my humble opinion, and far be it from me, you know, he has and he still has an incredible career, you know, as I said a moment ago, by far the biggest star. Nobody can touch him. But if his yacht would have sunk with him on it after the Mayweather fight, yeah, his legacy would have been better than what it is now. Because it's just the way it goes. That's why when you see, I mean, look at Chuck Liddell, for crying out loud. You know, there's no shame. That isn't a knock on Conor McGregor. That's just the way life goes. In this sport, you're only as good as your last fight. And unfortunately, at lightweight, he's lost a few. You know what I mean? But as I said, that doesn't mean he's not a good fighter. That doesn't mean he should be ashamed or anything like that. But that's just the way it goes. And when you lose a few, you know, people start to remember you for the wrong reasons. Like Chuck Liddell. I mean, Chuck Liddell was the man. Back in the day, right? The Iceman. Nobody fucked with him, right? He was feared. He was knocking everybody out. Unfortunately, now, you know, the memories of Chuck Liddell are getting knocked out by Tito Ortiz, losing his last few. And he had some bad knockouts in the UFC. And for a lot of newer fans, that's maybe how they see him. I think the old guard, the old school people, still remember in his prime. But the point I'm making is that's just kind of what happens if people stick around the sport too long when they start losing fights.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just take a quick second to hear from Blue Chew. You know the deal with Blue Chew. It is a performance enhancement supplement product, whatever you want to call it. It enhances your sexual experience in the bedroom. It's not only for people that have erectile dysfunction, although I'm pretty sure it would help with that. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of ED, erectile dysfunction. And the Blue Chew is an online prescription, so no awkward doctor's visits, no awkward conversations talking about, you know, how, you know, you have the sexual performance of a Mike Harrington. You don't have to say that. You just go to bluechew.com, speak to one of their affiliated physicians, and then once you get approved, you receive the prescription within days. And the best part, as I say, it is all done online. Now listen, Harrington, Lewis is out of town. Right. What are you using your Blue Chew for? Because I know, you know, you have a fixation and an obsession with Lewis, but he's not here right now. So what's happening with the Blue Chew?
Well, believe it or not, Mike, I'm fully vaxxed. I'm ready to go. If you go and tell your doctor you have a sexual, you know, performance like Mike Harrington, he's going to say you don't really need the Blue Chew because he doesn't know that I'm already on the Blue Chew. Chew it and do it, baby.
Yeah, you got the blue heart, you got the blue chew, you're chewing it and you're doing it. As he said, you can't take it on a full or empty stomach. And let's give you some of the details. The process is very simple, as I said. Just go to bluechew.com, consult with their online physician, all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and the strength for your prescription. I mean, let's be honest, not everybody's problem is maybe the same, or not everybody's desire. You don't want to be walking around with a hard-on for days. Although, trust me, this stuff could do that. So they will taper it. They will tweak it. They will get you the correct amount of, what's the word I'm looking for here, Harrington? The correct amount of
dosage?
Pep in your step, shall we say, that you're looking for. All you got to do is go to bluechew.com and then use that code BELIEVE and you will receive your first month order for free. I mean, come on. What more do you want? Go to bluechew.com. Use the code BELIEVE at checkout. Oh, sorry, pardon me. You pay $5 shipping. But still, come on. What do you want? They're going to give you a month's... Yeah, it's shipping. They got to ship. It's got to get to you. You got to use it. It comes from Blue Chewville, right? To get from Blue Chewville to your house, you just pay $5. But the actual product for the first month is absolutely free. You and your significant other will thank me later. Once more, bluechew.com. And please use that code BELIEVE. That tells them that we sent you. And... you get the first month for free. Okay, where were we?
All right. So do you want to break down this card for this weekend?
Yeah, let's get into it. Yeah, there's some. It's a good fight card on ABC, so a massive platform. That's another reason. I was thinking about this as well. Yeah, no wonder, because I never even thought about this. Of course, Darren's pissed off. He wanted to fight Marvin Vettori, wanted to potentially beat him and then get a title fight against Adesanya. So that all sucks. But of course, for Darren as well, he was going to get fucking paid this weekend. I don't know what his purse is, but I guarantee it's a nice big fat chunk of change, you know? And then when you go out there and you put all that work in and you don't get paid, you know, and you put your life on hold, you do all that stuff and you don't get the paycheck and you don't get to advance your career, it sucks. And I don't know how long a broken collarbone, maybe just Google that real quick. How long does it take to recover from a broken collarbone? I'm going to say, I don't know. That sounds like that's 8 months. If it's legit broken and not fractured, fractured is something very different. But if he has got a snapped collarbone, that could be a year. Who knows?
All right. So in adults, it usually takes 6 to 8 weeks for a collarbone to heal, although it can take longer.
Way off. I'm just imagining this bone here, if that fucking snaps, how there's no way that can heal up in 6 to 8 weeks.
I don't know. This is what Google is telling me, according to
shit.
I mean, it's NHS.UK, so National Health Services.
Well, the National Health Service, fucking don't you start on the National Health Service, right? Don't you start on the National Health Service. There's no one fucking going bankrupt in our country because they get cancer. You know what I'm saying? Brian, you were going to chime in a second ago. You came on the screen, then you disappeared. I want to know what you were going to say in reference to the broken collarbone.
Aaron didn't got it. 6 to 8 weeks.
No. Really? Shocking. Shocking.
I hate that I'm having to agree with him so much in this hour.
I gotta say, ever since you took the fedora off, you've brought your A game today, Harrington. You're doing well. You're doing good.
Stepping it up. So for Darren Till, I mean, just to talk about him for 1 second here, he had the fight last July with Robert Whittaker. Other than that, the fight with Calvin Gastelum at MSG in 2019 and then Masvidal earlier that year. He's only had 3 fights since 2018. And now 2021 is off to a pretty rocky start here. I mean, what is going, like, a couple things. Like, first and foremost, how frustrating is that when your career has hit a stalling point for, you know, nothing that you're doing, you know what I mean? But injuries keep picking up and lagging. And then the other question I have for you is, like, if you have a fight camp, right, you're paying for that fight camp even if you get injured and don't make it there, correct?
Yeah. Well, it depends how it is, right? If you're... Like the way I used to do it, and I was lucky because I trained at the Ruka Training Center. So thank you to Ruka. They always let me use their premises, their gyms. And of course, Jason Prillo was kind of like my guy. So I'd pay him. What I'm trying to say is I always structure my own camps, right? I do it at the Ruka Training Center. Sometimes I'd have other places that I went to as well, but I bring in a Muay Thai coach, a wrestling coach, and yada, 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 whatever coaches you need. And then I bring in training partners, right? And you got to pay for those training partners because at Ruka, it's a beautiful gym. But there isn't really a fight team in there. You know what I mean? It's a facility it was actually created for BJ Penn back in the day. That's why they built that gym in there. And now, of course, you know, they have a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu guys, MMA fighters, of course, that are training there. But it's also there for the staff. You know, they go in at lunchtime, they have a workout, Perillo, you know, does a little class for them and stuff like that. So there isn't a fight team, if you will. Now, you go in there any morning, there's all kinds of well-known fighters in there, and they'll be there with their teams. But for example, when I would spar there, I'd be on the phone or at the start of camp or whatever, say, hey, can we get regular work in and I'll give you X amount of dollars. You know, I give like Moses Murrieta, one of my guys, $500 a week throughout the whole camp. You got a few of them, fucking that mounts up. You got 3 or 4 of those guys. That's $2,000 a week in sparring partners, you know, but they wouldn't just be for sparring. That would be for wrestling, for jiu-jitsu, whatever. Or if you're like Darren Till, he's Cowbond, which is his gym, like a Greg Jones or an American Top Team or whatever. Not that that's, you know, no disrespect. It's nowhere near as big as those gyms, but still, it's that kind of a team atmosphere.
Yeah.
You will pay them, and I don't know anything about his structure or Darren's setup, but typically in that environment, you would pay an amount to the gym, you know, maybe some trainers or whatever. And then because of that, then you get everything. You know what I'm saying? So it depends. So I don't know if Darren's had to fork out a ton of money. He probably has forked out money in terms of, you know, training equipment, possibly some training partners that he might have brought in specifically, because sometimes your gym hasn't got the best people or the best people for that particular opponent. You got to source them, you got to fly them in and all that type of stuff. You know, he's probably flying in a few Italians, you know, so you never know, but it still fucking sucks.
Is that just to get used to having Italian curses thrown at you while you're hitting a guy?
Mamma mia, Darren, why are you hitting me so hard? Yeah, maybe. But all right, let's get into this card then. Let's start at the top. Kevin Holland steps in here. I always get asked to give keys to victory for certain opponents, you know, for the UFC production. So then the producers can then build a package around that. But they need the info from me. And I said, use his length, because he's got an 84-inch reach at middleweight for Kevin Holland, which is insane. But he doesn't really use it. He doesn't really fight behind his jab or use particularly straight shots. He's happy to kind of fall into the clinch. So I was like, well, he has to use his length. Obviously, in the Derek Brunson fight, he got taken down a lot. So I said he has to stop the takedown, because Vittori may have been working on a lot of wrestling. You may see Darren as not a wrestler, and a guy from the UK don't traditionally have the best wrestling. Even though Darren is hard to take down, he's shown that throughout his career. But still, it'd still be a smart move for Vittori to mix in some takedown attempts here and there, because it opens opportunities for the striking. But then the third thing that I put in there, because them two are pretty obvious, third thing I put in there was that he has to fight, you know. What did I say? Be a fighter, not a showman. Because in that last fight against Derek Brunson, he was so, you know, it seemed like his number one priority was putting on a show, talking the whole time, talking to Khabib between the rounds, which was great. It was humorous. It was funny. But ultimately, he wasn't focused on the task at hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he did come out and say, like, people were asking him, like, hey, are you going to talk more in this fight than in the last one? He's like, it's physically impossible. It's not possible for me to talk more in my next fight than I did in my last fight. I talked for 25 minutes straight. I talked in between rounds. So he did say he was going to make a point of, if it does get in between rounds, sitting down and actually talking to his cornermen and, like, figuring out game planning. So he seems to have the right mindset heading into this fight. Interestingly enough, as far as the takedown goes, only 1.33 per 15 minutes for Marvin Vittori. He only completes about 45% of the takedowns that he does attempt. So not exactly the best wrestler.
But still, as I said before, you don't need to complete those takedowns. Just going for the takedown attempt gives your opponent something else to think about. You know, you start, you know, if you just faint down a little bit, like, fuck, he's going for a takedown again. And if I don't defend it well enough, then I am going to get taken down. And then, of course, when you go down to defend the takedown, the hands come down and it opens opportunities. So it's always a smart thing to do, just to try and mix in those attempts. Vittori on the flip side. And by the way, Kevin Holland, you know, if he wins this fight, he's right back in the mix there. So it's a massive opportunity, but there's a big risk as well, because he went from winning five last year to maybe losing two by April in this one. You know, I think Vittori's got the harder hands. He's got the harder everything. He's probably the more powerful guy. But you got to remember, just going back to Kevin Holland, he's got a chin on him, this man, you know, because he did talk for 25 minutes. His gas tank is incredible. To talk that whole time whilst fighting in a UFC main event, your cardio's got to be through the roof. And as I say, he never seems to be too hurt from any of the shots. But Vittori, this is I think it's a good fight for Vittori, if I'm honest. I'm not saying that definitely that's my pick, but I would assume that he's the favorite of the bookies. What is that saying, Harrington? But yeah, Vittori, he's on a roll. What is he, on a 4 or 5 fight win streak right now? I think it's one or the other. And he's getting better and better. I mean, his coach, Rafael Cordeiro, down at King's MMA, he's a legend of the Muay Thai world, coming out of Curitiba. Shooter Box from back in the day. Fucking sensational coach. Absolutely sensational coach. And he's done wonders with Marvin Vittori. And then down there as well, they've got excellent grapplers as well. So it's a really, really good gym to come out of. So yeah, you know, for all those reasons, I kind of favor Vittori in this one, if I'm honest.
So Marvin Vittori is on a 4-fight win streak, and he is currently a minus, you can get him between 345 and 295.
And
so
who are those wins?
Those wins are against Jack Hermanson his last time out, then Carl Roberson, Andrew Sanchez, and Cesar Fajeya. All of them decisions except for the submission of Roberson.
Right.
And then his last loss before that was against Israel Adesanya. So, you know.
Split decision.
Yeah. So absolutely no slouch. And then before that, the draw against Omari Akhmedov.
Yeah,
so, you know, he is certainly, without a doubt, like you said, he's extremely tough. He's not an easy out for anybody. You know, as you did say, you know, Kevin Holland has a 7-inch reach advantage in this. He's 3 inches taller. He, you know, both men are fairly young. You know, and between the two of them, they're landing over 9 strikes per minute. Right. So I just see this being an absolute war on the feet, you know, and I don't know how much, I don't know how many takedowns there's going to be. But to me, if you're in a stand up battle, right, if you're going to let Kevin Holland stand there and have a 7-inch reach advantage on you, and you're going to want to get in there and trade shots with him, I don't know how Kevin Holland doesn't rack up enough, at least on points, to get the win there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and that's why it was so frustrating for me against watching Holland against Brunson. No disrespect to Brunson. It's not like I was rooting for Holland to win that fight. I wasn't. But it's just when I see somebody with the natural God-given ability that Kevin Holland has, and he's not using them to his advantage, it gets a little frustrating to watch as a fan, as a commentator, and as a former competitor in the sport. Because if he just lowered his base, right, to stop the takedown, that makes it way harder to shoot. And then if he just used his range, if he fucking used that jab, if he learned how to use that 84-inch reach properly, boom boom, use that jab, pump the jab, screw jab up the top, boom, come with the right hand, and then move around a little bit, you know, make Brunson come at you, and then when he comes at you again, bam bam bam, few shots, move off, step off, you know what I mean? He could have I'm not saying it could have been an easy night, but he could have made that a lot easier than what it was when he fought Brunson. But still, tremendous fight, can't wait for it. What's the co-main?
Arnold Allen versus Sadiq Youssef.
Oh, Arnold Allen, he's on a roll, you know. What is he? 8 in a row now in the UFC. I know a lot of people out here in the States might not be too familiar with him because the majority of his fights that Arnold Allen had were always on the European scene. You know, he fought out in mainland Europe, and of course, he was always on the March cards in London. So maybe he didn't get the exposure, but I know he had a good win. Who did he beat? Was it Nick Lentz or someone like that?
He beat Nick Lentz in Raleigh at the beginning of last year and then hasn't fought since.
And he looked great in that fight. Arnold Allen's really, really good. Is it 8 in a row?
It is 7 in a row in the UFC. It is 10 in a row overall.
Yeah, but 7 in a row in the UFC, I mean, that's fantastic. Kind of like, I don't want to say it's kind of like Leon Edwards, because obviously Leon Edwards' name is much bigger, but you can see the comparison that I'm making. He's going out there, he's doing his job, he's winning fights, and I think that's partly why they've started putting him on the American cards. I mean, of course, he's contracted and COVID and whatnot. Events aren't happening in England. But I'm sure partly is because this man has real potential. You know, Sadiq Youssef, you just talk a minute while I look up Sadiq Youssef.
So if you look at it here, Arnold Allen, he did start his career. First fight was on Jacek versus Penne, which was, you know, in Berlin back in 2015. He has not lost since joining the UFC. So after that, it was London, Liverpool, London. And then he got on the UFC 239 card, which was, if I'm not mistaken, that was Jones versus Santos. That was in Las Vegas, his first exposure to an American audience, just beating the crap out of Gilbert Melendez. You know, and then the win against Nick Lentz there, like I said, in Raleigh last year. So certainly this is a guy who American audiences are starting to get exposed to. But he is the one person who I would say, Believe You Me fans from across the pond reach out to me about more than anyone. Like, hey, why aren't you guys talking about Arnold Allen more? Yeah.
Really?
Like, they love him. Love him.
I'm glad. When he fought in Raleigh, North Carolina, I called that one and I went to the gym. There was a gym close by, an LA Fitness, so I went to there. When I was there, I met his brother and his dad. And,
Alfie Allen?
Alfie Allen, yeah. Oh, no, not Alfie Allen. He set me up there. No, but I met his brother and his dad at the gym, and I was getting an Uber, and I think they were trying to get a lift on by the UFC bus. And I said, hey, jump in the Uber with me, no problem. You know, so they jumped in the car because I wanted to pick their brains about Arnold, because obviously I was commentating his fight, and it's always good to get those extra little bits of information. Sure. And his dad was telling me all kinds of stories. And, you know, he was no stranger to getting into a few street fights. Let's just put it like that, when he was younger. And then eventually he was like, I got to put this to good use. I can fight. So it's a good fight. Sadiq Youssef as well. He's on a good roll. I think four or five wins came off the contender. So that's a good one. That's a really, really good fight.
Got the win on the contender, 4 wins in the UFC, 2 by TKO. So, yeah, certainly. I mean, both guys have never tasted defeat inside the UFC. Youssef's last time out got the decision win against Andre Touchy Feely. So, yeah, no question about it. This is a banger of a co-main event. And, I mean, if I was you, I don't know, maybe just shoot Arnold Allen a text, be like, hey, man, good luck, so we can get him on Monday.
We can get that motherfucker on Monday, whether I text him or not. In fact, saying that, he's probably flying back to England. But you want to get him on? I like Arnold Allen. I'm just not a fan of the tash. The mustache has got to go. Can we bring up a picture of Arnold Allen for the YouTubers? He's a great guy. I love the way he fights. He's tremendously skilled. But if he wants to increase his fan base, obviously winning this weekend against Sadiq Youssef on ABC, again, massive platform. All these guys, and ladies, of course, they're going to have a lot more fans if they win this weekend. But Arnold, one word of advice, lose the mustache, bro.
Yeah, that mustache is not safe for ABC.
Brian, what are we saying about the mustache?
I'm not into it. I also feel like Harrington is not allowed to have an opinion on bad face.
I love the way every time you come on, you just talk shit about Harrington. It's fantastic. All right, well, rounding out the rest of the card, Kyle Dorcas taking on Aliashkab Kizriev. I think that might have just got cancelled, or Kizriev was supposed to fight somebody else. I saw something online earlier. Sam Alvey taking on Julian Marquez, the Cuban Missile Crisis. That'll be a good fight. Sam Alvey always comes to bang, Cuban Missile Crisis guy. He's a good banger as well. Maybe he gets a follow-up date with the Miley Cyrus. Harrington with the finger up at the back.
Do you think he comes out with the MC shaved into his chest?
I don't know, because, and of course, for anyone that doesn't know, we're referring to, what did Miley Cyrus say? She said, if you shave MC into your chest, I will date you, right?
Yeah, so he in his post-fight interview, it was the day before Valentine's Day, so he asked if Miley Cyrus would be his Valentine. Miley Cyrus tweeted back at him and said, all right, sexy man, shave MC into your chest and I'm yours. And then he blew it. He absolutely blew it coming back.
Yeah, what did he do? How did he blow it on the comeback?
He was like, get a tattoo that says like Cuban Missile Crisis or something over your belly button. I was like, come on, bro.
Yeah,
what
right.
Are you doing?
Like Miley Cyrus is going to go out there and start getting that. Yeah, he could have said, okay, I'll do it, but can we have this, can we have a firm agreement? Not that we're sending out contracts or whatever, but if I do the MC in my chest, can we do that? You don't ask it to get a tattoo.
Here's how you do it, right? You call up Manscaped, you secure yourself a sponsorship, then you say, hey, Miley, I got my Manscaped right here. Come do it for me.
Do you know what, Harrington and Brian, this will probably kill you too. That's actually pretty smart. That's pretty what? Smart. I thought, and this is what I was shocked. I thought, are we getting courting or dating advice from Harrington on how fucking a person goes out there and pulls somebody like Miley Cyrus? I thought, has he got the audacity to sit there and do that, Brian?
But hey, that was a solid suggestion.
It was. What is going
I think
on?
It would work. I think it would work.
Are we saying that Lewis needs to stay in Jamaica from now on? Right about now, man.
Dude, there is no way I have two of these performances in me. We need Lewis back ASAP.
Oh, you are on fire today. Good for you, mate. Good for you. Listen, I think if he does that, it's a little lame. You know what I mean? They had the fun. They did it. Miley, they had the little to and fro. And Miley Cyrus has probably forgotten all about him. And if he comes out again now and tries to revisit it, she'll be like, all right, you stalker. I was having a laugh. You talked about me on TV. We had a little back and forth. I'm married, dickhead. What are you doing?
She's not married. She's a single woman.
I know, but I'm saying, like, you could be like, I've got a boyfriend, I'm seeing somebody, I'm married, whatever, I'm off the market, I'm gay, leave me alone, stalker, Mr. Crazy Scary UFC guy, stop scaring me.
That's what the MC stands for, Mr. Crazy.
Yeah, or Missile Crisis, maybe. Ooh, we could do that, couldn't he? Because that's his nickname.
Dude, if he comes out and starches Sam Alvey and he just has an MC emblazoned in his chest and he's talking on the microphone after, I mean, that has to do something to a girl, no?
I'm doing it. I mean, if I was Julian Marquez, of course, right? I'm not doing it this weekend. I'm not ripping my shirt off. I'm in no state to be ripping my shirt off on live TV. I'll tell you fucking that right now. Okay, this is a good one. Jason Perillo. Training Mackenzie Dern. Of course, Mackenzie Dern, high-level black belt, doing sensational since she got with Perillo. Hands are coming on. I see her in the gym quite a lot. My word, the hands are looking very fast. The head movement to go with it. She's fighting Nina Ansaroff, of course, the other half to Amanda Nunes' power couple. One point worth mentioning there is that Nina, this is her first fight since returning, since giving birth to their daughter, I think it is. And Mackenzie Dern has been there. She had a kid and came back in 2019. So she kind of knows what's going on there. But I got to lean towards Mackenzie Dern there. No disrespect.
Yeah, I mean, Nina does have the ring rust. And then also her last time out was the loss against Tatiana Suarez. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Michael, I think you were you working the desk for that fight, and they asked you to come in between rounds and like give your take on it?
Which one? Tatiana Suarez and Nina Ansaroff?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Maybe. Because I used to do that because they used to have me come on and then like do a little bit of like extra commentary. And I was like, are they fucking auditioning me for commentary here? And you get so nervous, you know what I mean? Because like first few times I've done it, I'm like, fuck, give good input, think of something good. And it'd be like me and Tyrone Woodley. And Tyrone Woodley would go first and he'd say exactly what I was going to say. I was like, motherfucker, think of something else. Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember all those ones.
I seem to remember you making the point there, because I think Ansaroff, if I'm not mistaken, won that first round against Suarez. And then you had said Suarez really needs to just bully her against the fence and start working for those takedowns. And then almost like clockwork, you know, within the first 30 seconds, Suarez gets her up against the fence, you know, pulls her down, and then Ansaroff had absolutely no answer for once it got to the ground. So, you know,
Ansaroff had no answer.
No Ansaroff.
No Ansaroff. And then, of course, this is going to be a banger. This is going to be a banger. I'm excited. Mike Perry, come on. Come on. Come on. And taking on Daniel Rodriguez, who, by the way, is a sick fighter, a great Muay Thai specialist. That's a fucking great way to kick off a main card. Mike Perry, I mean, yeah, all right, controversy follows this man around, okay? But he's a fascinating character, and he's a lot of fun to watch. I'm a, you know, for all the wrong reasons, maybe, but I'm a fan of Mike Perry. I like talking to him. Every time I've hung out with Mike Perry, every time I've chatted to him, they've always been positive interactions. You know, as I say, just find himself in a few little tight spots publicly here and there, you know, but it's not like I never made mistakes in my life. You know what I'm saying?
Wasn't his first big dust up on your card at UFC 190? Oh, wait, no, it was the Dan Henderson card in England. No, wasn't he like talking shit about somebody's corner the week of on fight week?
I'm not sure. Is that when he knocked out Danny Roberts? He did.
Yes.
Out Danny Roberts there. Yeah. Yes. That's a great fight. That is a great fight. The real question is who is going to corner Mike Perry in this fight? It's going to be awesome to see. I can't wait. I can't wait.
So, all right, this is interesting, though. So Mike Perry, like you said, he's entertaining, right? There's no doubt about that. Like he's his antics, whatever the case may be, the corner man. He's 7-7 in the UFC, you know? Like this is a guy, he's a 500 fighter. I mean, is this a thing where it's like, you know, if Mike Perry doesn't start putting together a few in a row, is he really UFC caliber talent?
If you look at the people that he's fought, I would say so. You know, I mean, let's have a look at his record here. But Mike Perry brings it. He has some shortcomings, I guess, in the grappling department. You know, he's been exposed a little bit. Donald Cerrone got him in that arm bar. Saying that, but Cerrone has good jiu-jitsu, though. Lost to Tim Means, beat Mickey Gall, lost to Jeff Neal, head kick, lost to Vicente Luque in a fucking war. I mean, that fight against Vicente Luque, I called that. That was in Montevideo, Uruguay. Yeah, there it is right there on the screen. I mean, just unreal. Beat Alex Oliveira, lost to Donald Cerrone, beat Paul Felder. I mean, that's a solid win. Lost to Max Griffin, Santiago Ponzinibbio. Yeah, he's fighting good guys. They're not like the championship level guys, but they're you know, ranked 10 to 15 type guys, you know, and he always puts on a good show. You know what I mean? You generally want to see where Mike Perry fights.
I can't argue with that. I still get excited for Mike Perry fights, but I don't know. For me, like there is there's kind of a line of demarcation when it comes to, you know, the UFC being the premier fight organization. And when I see a guy who's been with the company since, I believe, 2016, he's won as many as he's lost. I guess for me, when you get to a point 5 years in now, is he ever going to be an elite fighter?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to look up his age here because that's definitely a factor. He's got the experience. 29. He's still only 29 years old. Mike Perry's a wild man. We know this. You know, does a lot of wild stuff, says a lot of wild stuff, and fights like a wild man. And he makes wild choices with his cornermen and things like that. So you have to wonder, is he really applying himself in between training camps, in the training camp? Is he doing the right thing? Is he doing everything he can to be as good as he can possibly be? Now, to answer your question, is he going to be a champion one day? Who knows? If you ask me to put money on it, I'd probably say no. Do you know what I mean? So he's not like a main event guy, even though he probably has done a main event. If he wasn't a main event, I'd still watch him. But on the undercard, you want entertainment. You want fun fights. You know, you don't necessarily want guys that, yeah, they always win, but they play it safe. At least you know with Mike Perry, when he goes out there, he's going to go for it. He's going to, you know, live by the sword and die by the sword. He's going to try and kill or be killed, you know? And yeah, you want to see the big title fight in the main event, but I want to be fucking entertained all the way through it as well, you know? And you stick Mike Perry on there, then I will support that move because the man, you know, he brings it each and every single time. And I think that's the end of our show. What do you think?
I mean, I couldn't think of a better way to kick off UFC on ABC2, and I couldn't think of a better way to end this show.
I got to say, Harrington, you brought it. You did well today. Did very, very good. Brian, of course. I'm going to go off and get my hair cut, and we will see you all next, well, on Monday. Do you think Lewis is going to be back in one piece on Monday? Guess by Sunday, right?
So I don't know. I know he almost got put on the no-fly list heading to Jamaica. So
let's talk about this real quick. Let's talk about this because it's out there. It's on Twitter. I mean, if you listen, I know I was joking last time saying don't follow Lewis on Twitter, but if you do follow him, there's a lot of controversy. What happened? Why did he almost get put on the no-fly list? So he's going away on holiday to Jamaica with his fucking great aunt, his kid. There's eight of them. It's a respectable trip, and he almost gets put on the no fucking fly list. Why didn't we start the show talking about this? That would have been hilarious.
Well, I mean, apparently, you know, according to Lewis's Twitter. Yeah.
Always two sides to every story, but go ahead.
According to Lewis's Twitter, he was nearly put on the no fly list because he was drinking a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah, because every time you drink a cup of coffee, you almost get put on the no-fly list. And then I saw that he went out there and he tagged American Airlines, and American Airlines responded because, you know, that's a smart thing to do. But, yeah, I mean, have you drank a cup of coffee before, Harrington?
Surprisingly enough, yeah, I've had a cup of coffee or two in my life.
Did you almost get put on the no-fly list?
Never once.
Brian, have you drank a cup of coffee on a plane?
Not if the government's listening.
No! There he is, our conspiracy guy. Anyway, hopefully Lewis gets back in one piece. We'll hear all about it on Monday. In the meantime, enjoy your fights. Harrington, well done today. Great job. Likewise, of course, Brian. But be well. Enjoy your weekends. We'll see you Monday.